This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 141, Rose-Colored Earbuds.
Hello, this is Michael Martin joining you again for another episode of GamesAtWork.biz, and I'm joined today by my good friend and co-host, Michael Rowe.
Woohoo! Hello, hello, hello.
So we've got a show for you. It's been a little while since we've been together. We've been traveling, our co-host Phaedra is on the other side of the planet where I was not even 48 hours ago. So
I was a little over a week ago.
And you were a little over a week ago. So everybody's been everywhere, but at least two of us are back here. And
everybody's been everywhere, but nobody's been here.
Well, nobody's been nowhere, but everyone's been everywhere.
Yes.
And you know what they say, or not they, Casey Kasem, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. So
for the sky.
Or for the sky or the stars? I thought it was the stars.
Was the sky.
We'll have to fact check that one later. But before we fact check that, let's talk about Magic Leap. So you saw, because this has like all the right components here, virtual reality stuff, Star Wars kind of stuff, a little video vignette about Magic Leap bringing the magic of Star Wars to life. So what were your impressions of this?
Well, actually, I thought it was kind of funny. So TechCrunch has a video podcast that they do. It's, you know, 5 minutes long. They do kind of the top news stories. And that's what really caught my eye was this one on Magic Leap bringing Star Wars to life. And I thought it was kind of cool because, you know, we've been doing a lot of things to bring our science fiction and fantasy movies into this world, like the BB-8. You know, right. You have your little robot at home that rolls around.
Right.
You can do the hologram that they had with that, but you have to hold your camera up in front. And given kind of the buzz around Magic Leap, which I don't think you haven't actually seen one of these things, right?
Not in the wild. I've seen the news articles about them, and I've seen the videos, and I've seen the splashing and whale in the basketball
the
court kind of stuff.
The consistent story seems to be that no one's seen it. So, but the basic premise is you have the ability to kind of project light on the eye, and that gives you the ability to see these augmented reality spaces. So I can just imagine, instead of having to hold my phone up and pointing it at the BB-8, actually having lasers beamed into my eyes to get that hologram for the you're my only hope, we need you, Obi-Wan, right?
So you would see it because it was being beamed into your eyes, right?
Right, right. And so there's all this promise that looks really interesting, and I just can't wait till we actually have the day where this is out in the wild, and we can actually see it, play with it, and see what's going on. Especially given all the other news around AR and VR lately, including another story in this same video report on Zeiss making a premium Google Cardboard headset, which I just think is so funny. I mean, the whole idea of Google Cardboard was it's a piece of cardboard.
Exactly. And if it's going to be a piece of cardboard, it should be about as expensive as a piece of cardboard.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, there's the fact that Google at their developers conference kind of released reference hardware specs now for Google Cardboard. Mm-hmm. For their AR, VR experiences, that's going to take it well beyond the cardboard space. And then as we saw this week, and I know you saw this too, is our buddies over at Twitter now diving into AR and VR with some of the acquisitions or acqui-hires that they're doing.
Yeah, well, they acquired Magic Pony Technologies. And so this is the thing that kind of caught my attention too. This is a sort of combination of the acquisition, machine learning, VR, and AR, and they're going to be focusing a new group within Twitter on AR and VR. So it struck me to think about, well, how is this going to fly, so to speak, in the Twitter universe? And it feels like it could be in a number of different directions, really.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, Magic Pony, I saw a couple of the stories on that this week and really should have put it in the show notes, so I'm glad you found it and reminded me.
Yep.
They actually are a machine learning algorithm company. It's like eight guys in a closet that do some interesting stuff around video analytics and understanding information in video and images. So you tie that into an AR/VR story, and now you start getting into that highly realistic, hyper-realistic view that that the guys over at Magic Leap kind of imply with their stuff, or the Microsoft HoloLens, et cetera, where you really start understanding the characteristics of the environment you are physically in and applying AR and VR on top of that.
Exactly. And, you know, just the video that's in that particular article reminds me an awful lot of the augmented reality I'm losing my language here. The augmented reality envisioned at the beginning of the very beginning, where you would wake up and you would see all these advertisements everywhere, you know, that would be tailored to you, which is great, but you'd see advertisements on your kitchen counter, you'd see advertisements on your cupboards, you would find them on your floor, they'd all be everywhere.
In your cat litter?
Yeah, you know. So just the video there, this hyper reality is yet another extreme look about what this could be. So the ability to filter and the ability to alter what you want to see at any particular point in time is going to be absolutely crucial. And frankly, this also reminds me a little bit of, gosh, we'd have to really hunt to find this. Remember that dashboardy sort of view through your car's front screen? So you would have, hey, there's a Starbucks in 2 miles. It's over here. By the way, here's a coupon for you to go and buy a coffee. And here's some other things that are happening as well. So all these, you know, communications now just bombarding you. And you'd have to really learn how to filter it out and keep it away from you as you were going forward.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I really, really wonder kind of the overload, the visual overload that you would get. And if you can filter things out, I know there was some recent announcements this week, and I can't remember the name of the company that was doing noise-canceling earbuds that would allow you to filter out specific noises, like the ability to filter out sirens because you live in a big city and there's lots of sirens around. So you don't want to hear those, but you do want to hear other ambient street noise. And I can just imagine putting on those types of earbuds and, you know, some kind of video overlay to where you filter out all the things in the world you don't want to see. And then you get into this not only see, but also don't want to hear. And you get into this very strange echo chamber environment where everything's always looking rosy for you and you alone.
Rose-colored earphones.
Yes.
And rose-colored virtual reality glasses. Boy, that might have been even a better title for this show, wouldn't it?
Could have been, but too late.
But it's too late for that. Said. Yeah, I know. Like I said, my words are not coming to me very well today, but I'm hopefully bringing across to the audience here the things that I'm experiencing, that I'm thinking, and this hyper-reality look is just way beyond the pale. And unless you are in some kind of car where you're just driving along and it is driving on your behalf and you don't have to pay attention to what's coming up on the windshield, you would not be able to really function very well in this kind of environment now, could you?
Nope.
All right. So let's continue to move a little on from here, because this was a good start, but it's a good next step when we think about video entertainment. And you, as I recall, were super, super excited to go see the Warcraft movie. I kind of poo-pooed it a bit, but the results of the box office proved that you were right. This is a big deal.
Yes, it is the most successful video game movie of all time. Now, having said that, it's a pretty low bar, right? And I've talked to some of the people that I play World Warcraft with, and the reviews are pretty similar across fans of the game that it wasn't deep enough in a lot of the story aspects. But if you were already a fan of the game, you kind of knew a lot of the background and the backstory, so that was helpful. The reviews from people who were not fans was, you know, good action fantasy movie, but not deep enough on the background.
Because it assumed everybody already knew it.
Yeah, and so that's like a Dune, really hard balance.
Dune was just that same way.
Yeah, Dune, when the first Dune movie came out, a friend of mine went and saw it before I got to see it, and she had the best quote at the time. She said it was like watching slides from your vacation. Right? You had to know about the entire vacation for the slides to mean anything.
Right. Yep.
But this is probably better than that. I mean, the movie cost $160 million to make.
Whoa.
They've already brought in almost $400 million at the time of this story, which is about 10 days ago, 11 days ago.
That's pretty good.
So but most of that was from China.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so you can't look at it a U.S. movie. You got to look at it as a global movie because of really, from a gaming perspective, it is a global game.
It's a global phenomenon, absolutely.
So, the good news for those of us who liked it is that this probably means they will make the sequel. And considering the way the movie is set up, it's designed for a sequel. I mean, the whole mythos of the game is a very, very long, detailed mythos and background and story that could be brought into many, many, many movies. I don't think they'll do it, to be honest. I think they might get one more out of it, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Very cool. Very cool.
And if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's a fun movie.
Even if you don't have all the background?
Even if you don't have the background. Just accept it for the ride that it is.
All right. Well, sounds good. So let me suggest, too, that if people would like to do something else that's fun and indoors this summer, that you might consider taking your kiddos to Apple Camp.
Yes.
So you found this article, too, about how Apple is now having in the retail stores a course or a camp, essentially, for kids to be able to come in and learn how to use Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R, which was a software language that's an outgrowth from Scratch, from MIT Scratch, to learn how to program robots. How cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I think Apple's done a really good job of trying to get younger kids engaged in the programming aspect. And with what they announced at WWDC this year with the Swift Playgrounds app, which will be out later on this year once iOS 10 comes out, getting ways for people to get into programming who don't need to buy the full development rig or laptop or desktop with all the power and price that implies. But you just need access to, you know, simple Tinker environment or Swift Playgrounds. Google did something this week similar to that with another kind of a reference platform for block-based programming that allows you to take physical blocks and put them together and build a set of steps to do something in the physical world. As in, like programming. At MoogFest this year, I got to play around with, and I have a set of the little bits.
Little bits, yeah.
So I think it's really cool of really helping kids get into the idea of programming. One of the things that I've always worried is that as we continue to abstract away more and more from the underlying technology of programming, losing you get to the point where you lose the ability to understand what the computer actually does. And so then how do you keep the innovation going forward to do new things with computers?
Say a little bit more about that.
Well, when I first started programming, right, you actually learned how the computer itself processed. You had to understand things like how big is a byte?
Sure.
You know, is it an 8-bit machine, a 16-bit machine, 32-bit? You know, all of these things had implications to how you program. And so, you know, people started with assembly or C because that was as close to the hardware as possible. You learned how the BIOS worked on the machine. You learned how the application language that you wrote in was converted into assembler and applied to the machine, et cetera. So you had to learn a lot. And then you stepped up and you started doing object-oriented programming. So certain things like garbage collection, i.e. freeing up memory, were abstracted away. And not very well initially. And so you got to a level of programming where a lot of bugs were introduced, a lot of garbage was introduced into the code because you didn't understand how it all fit together.
Same like
dynamic link libraries and other libraries, understanding that you should be able to share the dynamic link libraries that are on the system, but everybody assumed a different version, so you ended up having 50 of those. And we keep abstracting more and more away, and the people who understand exactly how things work are fewer and fewer. So once you really take it far away, where everything is at the highest level abstraction, how do you make sure that you still have the technical skills to build the next generation chip? How do you make sure you understand how to build the next generation graphical device? Well, maybe we no longer need GPUs for driving a display, but now you need to abstract that into something that's an auditory interface, right? So it may be I don't want to use the word trivial, but a non-event worry that I have. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it is, because I see certain things where people go, I don't understand why this is doing this. And then it's like, well, if you understand how memory is allocated in a program, right, then you understand that you've gotten to a point where you've consumed too much memory, you haven't freed it up, and that's causing problems at the operating system level, which implicates, you know, has issues with this program that just assumes that all the memory is available and can just allocate memory whenever it needs and keep running. And that's what's crashing, right? So understanding how it fits together, understanding how UDP and TCP work as the underlying technology of the internet. You know, there's all these base foundational things that sometimes get abstracted away. Doesn't mean the work done by application programmers is necessarily bad, right? Or bot programmers. But there has to be that many layer of complexity that people understand for the whole system to work.
I understand a little bit better. Granted, in the fullness of time, some of these abstraction layers really ought to be abstracted away, and people shouldn't have to focus or worry about them. But I understand.
But somebody has to understand the thing that actually gets it there.
Yeah, true. And as we are thinking about future of hardware, the people who are knowledgeable, in that space, are the ones that have to be doing something special and different there to continue to push the evolution and innovation in the hardware space too.
Yep.
All right. Makes sense. Got it.
So speaking of special and innovation and pushing ahead, you were at an event this week around Agile, which is abstracting things and really pushing things ahead.
I was. And it was almost like Agile Camp. So one of the things that I got a chance to do while I was there is to listen to a number of people speak about their experience with agile development, their things that have been working well, some things maybe not have been working so well. And the element that I'll share around here is from a keynote speaker who his name is Jürgen Apollo. And he has just written a new book called Managing for Happiness. The subtext or subtitle for that is Games, Tools, and Practices to Motivate Any Team. And it was really quite interesting to see his thoughts and his experiences on why managing for happiness is something that generates the kind of environment where success is more probable and outcomes are reached in a faster and better way. So that was really a great opportunity for me to get a chance to listen to him and the things that he shared. It was a chance for me to play a quick game with him using something that I think you know a little bit about, called a sneaky card.
Yes.
And I was able to do a selfie with a man who had up until that point been a perfect stranger. And then another perfect stranger decided that she wanted to photobomb us. So we did another selfie. And so there's a photobomb of the selfie with a perfect stranger, so that he then in exchange got the sneaky card that he could do a selfie with a perfect stranger too. So it was really quite a good session yesterday, really action-packed from front to back. It was at the McKimmon Center at NC State's campus, Centennial Campus. So it was a number of breakout rooms, a large auditorium kind of space for the keynotes at the front and the back end, and great learning around prioritization techniques, ways of calculating financial results, some of the more basic tenets of the Agile Manifesto of small teams focused on minimum viable product, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just a great, great, great opportunity to spend some time with people who've got a diverse set of experiences and a chance to really learn what best looks like from a variety of different perspectives. So I was really happy to do it. And
very cool.
And I did not get there early enough to get a copy of Jurgen's book for free, but I did pay for a copy, and so I'll have one being sent to me in the next few days, and I'll get a chance to take a closer look at it when it arrives. So looking forward to that.
And you know what would be really great?
Not sure. What would be really great?
A review of the book on our website.
Ah, that would be fun.
Maybe like a little blog post.
That could be.
Cool.
That could be. Yeah, so we'll definitely do that. Kind of circling back to the topic that we had at the beginning, looking at virtual reality, augmented reality, and the direction Twitter is going in, there were a couple of articles on NPR earlier this week that really struck me as, boy, you know what? Here is an opportunity. So one of the articles that I'm remembering was a discussion about the condition, the medical conditions in Syria, and how difficult it is right now to have medical professionals on the ground with the experience and the equipment and the material necessary to really make the big difference for people's lives in Syria. They're having to create hospitals that are underground and in caves. They don't have all the supplies that they might need. And this article talked a little bit about the way that people were texting to other doctors in other parts of the world and getting help from them, sharing x-rays, sharing lab reports, and getting some good suggestions about what to do and how to solve some of the problems that were coming up. So I kind of coupled that with another story that I'd heard about young people who have to go into the hospital for operations and the kind of anxiousness, the anxiety that's created by going under sedation. And if you're dealing with very young kids, the sensation of going into or going under when you're under sedation is not exactly a comfortable one. You're kind of surrounded by all these people kind of looking at you. And part of the solution that had been created there for those kids was projecting a video up above them. So they're on the bed and they're being moved around and they have a chance to watch a video of their own choosing. So what struck me as a really interesting combination of the texting, of the Twitter, of Periscope, and of the challenges that were faced by the doctors who had created these little video devices for the kids and doing that device in a way that was, I don't remember the exact term, Michael, but it was like contamination resistant. You don't want to introduce devices, medical or otherwise, near where you're going to be doing an operation. They have to be contained. They have to be something that will not be a vector for infection. So they had to go do a number of those things. What struck me was, wouldn't it be interesting? Wouldn't it be good that if you are in the field and you're needing to do an operation on a person and you need some expertise right now to help you make the right judgment calls, you could have a cell phone that is contained within a splash and disease vector driving method that could have Periscope running on it through the hospital's network and be able to bring in other people that could be watching what's going on in the operation right then, right there, and be able to share via text, video, spoken voice, some of the things that could be, should be done at that particular point in time. I know that there are very sophisticated means of doing this where the operating theater will have all that equipment. But if you are in a part of the world where having access to equipment and material is really a challenge, you could do an awful lot of that with a cell phone. And that's kind of what struck me and why I went ahead and did that tweet to Andy that I did. And I've not had a chance to chat with him about it. But I think this could be a really, really interesting thing that the combination of Twitter and Periscope could be a big thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of platforms have been doing this live video integration, right? Mm-hmm. You now can do live video on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, via Periscope, et cetera. And what that allows you to do beyond just something simple like Google Hangouts or a FaceTime or a Skype video is, right, is really change the interaction between one and many.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely something interesting there.
Well, and potentially some of this could really be even crowdsourced, because just imagine the situation where there's something going wrong in the operation, right? In theory, there could be a multiplicity of people who could potentially be helped there, right? Now, granted, that could also present a set of inherent challenges too, where you have these experts who may or may not really be experts with conflicting advice for you in a time when there's, when minutes matter and decisions have to be made quickly. But again, just thinking out loud here, this is a big difference and potential big difference maker, especially in a spot where expertise needs to be brought to bear quickly, and crowdsourcing might be one way of dealing with it and getting past some of these authentication and validation that the people who are participating are in fact knowledgeable in what they see, understand, and can advise on.
Absolutely.
Wanted to get that out there because it's something I wanted to share with Andy, and now at least we'll have an offline vector to do that with him.
Yep.
All right. Well, Michael, as we kind of wind up for the day here, what games are you playing?
I just picked up the new one. I'm trying to find it. oh, man, it's something Sandbox, which I thought you would be interested in. I cannot find it. I will have to find a link. But it basically is an 8-bit world builder environment similar to Minecraft, but not as detailed.
Uh-huh.
Which allows you to play daily adventures. It's free with paid in-game upgrades.
Right.
Right. Allows you to build an environment, build on it, and then create your own little game levels and then share those game levels for other people to play with. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. It's back to that whole idea of kids learning how to program, because it's kind of targeted at kids. Gosh darn it, I can't find the name, but the name will be in the show notes if you go to our website at gamesatwork.biz and look up episode 141. You will have the link for you and you can check it out.
All right. Well, I will definitely do that. I have nothing really new in terms of games that I'm playing. I'm still playing Slither. I'm still playing things like, you know, Two Dots and stuff like that, Merged. So these are, you know, games we've talked about already for a while, but so nothing brand spanking new for me. So I think with that, we should go ahead and wrap up for today. We've had quite a number of interesting discussions about what it means to be happy, what it means to figure out what's going on in the virtual space and the augmented reality space and how to close distances amongst people. So been a pretty darn good show for today, I would think.
Absolutely, and would love to hear your feedback. So do us a favor. Go over to iTunes and rank the show. Give us a rating. We'd prefer that you give it a 5. That would be great. but give it what you think it needs. If you have time, you can put some comments with that. But definitely give us a rating. We'd appreciate your support.
Absolutely. And any feedback you might have here too, things you want to hear more of, hear less of, we're very open to that. So love to hear from you on any of the vectors that we have enabled here for you to communicate with us and for us to chat back with you.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, with that, we'll say see ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.